Welcome to Expert Conversations Beyond, where Chatham's experts break down important trends and themes we're discussing with clients in the capital markets. I'm Laura Grant, and I'm Chatham's president. I'm having this discussion today with Reuben Daniels, Managing Director and Global Head of Investment Banking at Chatham. If you're in financial leadership at your firm, you're probably navigating some pretty confusing conditions in the fixed income markets right now.
Absolutely. Geopolitics, tariffs, yield curves, things are certainly unusual.
Today, we want to get some clarity on one of the more unusual things we're seeing, the rarely discussed U-shaped yield curve. And while U-shaped yield curve might not be a term you hear every single day in the financial news, it actually has significant implications for how you might be thinking about strategic financial decisions.
Yes, our mission in this deep dive is to explain what this curve looks like, what it represents, and what it might mean for your company's financial planning over the next few months.
So let's get straight to it then. What exactly are we looking at when we talk about a U-shaped yield curve?
Okay, imagine a graph. The horizontal axis is time to maturity for a bond, and short-term on the left, long-term on the right. And on the vertical axis is the interest rate, the yield.
Got it. The typical yield curve chart.
Exactly. Now, normally, you would see an upward slope, longer-term bonds, higher yields. But a U-shaped curve is different. It actually starts with high interest rates for the really short-term. Then you see a noticeable drop in rates for yields maturing in, say, the 2 to 3 year range. And then the rates climb back up again for the longer term maturity. So it forms this U shape on the graph.
And how deep is this U shape we're seeing right now? Is it subtle?
No, it's actually quite noticeable. If you look at the difference in yield between, say, the 2 year and the 10 year Treasury notes, and also compare the 2 year Treasury to the 6 month T-bill, the average gap is around 45 basis points right now. There's a historically significant bend in that curve. And the main takeaway is that we're seeing this specific measurable deviation from the typical relationship between short and long-term rates.
Now, just to put this into perspective for everyone listening, what are those more common yield-shaped curves that finance leaders are probably more used to seeing?
Well, in the U.S., about 80% of the time, we see that upward sloping curve, sometimes called contango. And think of it as longer-term money costs more. It generally reflects a healthy, growing economy. On the other hand, we see an inverted yield curve where short-term rates are actually higher than long-term rates.
The one everyone talks about as a recession signal?
Exactly. That's the one. It gets a lot of attention, and it happens roughly 8% of the time in the U.S. Then there's the flat yield curve where rates are pretty similar across the chart, also about 8% of the time, and that often signals a market in transition. The market's saying rates are going to stay relatively stable.
So where does our U-shaped curve fit in? How rare is it really?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. A U-shaped yield curve is genuinely rare. According to Fred data, the Federal Reserve economic data going back 50 years, we only see this shape about 3% of the time.
Wow, only 3%?
Yeah. So for financial and C-suite executives that are listening, the key here is that we're in a pretty unusual territory, so it really demands a higher level of scrutiny.
Absolutely. 3% really drives home how unusual this is.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't the first time we've seen it, even if it's rare. When did it happen before? And maybe more importantly, what happened next for the economy and the markets?
That's the right question, isn't it? Especially for strategic planning. Historically, these U-shaped yield curves have tended to show up just before periods of significant financial disruption. Look back to 1998. That was the Asian and Russian financial crisis. We saw it in 2000, leading up to the dot-com crash, and again in 2007, just before the great financial crisis. And even more recently, it appeared in late 2019, just before the COVID-19 pandemic, and now we've seen it emerge again since the end of 2024.
Okay, so a bit of a rogues gallery of financial turmoil periods.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did these U-shaped periods typically stick around before things changed?
They were pretty short-lived. On average, maybe 3 to 4 months, 16 weeks.
That's quick.
Yeah, and the depth of the U-shape, that basis point difference we talked about, averaged around 30 basis points in those past episodes, though it peaked at around 65 basis points just before the great financial crisis. But I think the crucial insight for planning horizons is the speed and the decisiveness with which these situations tend to resolve.
That leaves very little room for reacting.
Right. And the way these yield U-shaped curves resolved historically might be telling for where we might be headed right now. Nearly every single time we've seen a U-shaped yield curve in the past, it immediately preceded an economic recession. And the U-shape itself was generally resolved by a significant, often rapid reduction in short-term policy interest rates, with the Fed cutting rates sometimes even between their scheduled meetings.
But they acted fast.
Yeah, very fast. If history is any guide here at all, this shape isn't just some academic curiosity. It's potentially a really strong indication of significant changes coming towards us.
Okay, so if history is a precedent, this U-shape is signaling something potentially big about the future path of the economy and rates. What specifically does this unusual shape suggest about where rates might be heading the near to medium term?
Well, if you look at the forward curve, the U-shape there predicts a fascinating story that's very relevant to borrowing and investment strategies. The curve basically indicates an expectation for a rapid decline in short-term rates pretty soon, but then followed by a fairly quick reversal and an increase in those short-term rates in 3 to 4 years.
That does sound weird for a forward curve.
It's very rare for these forward curves to change direction so abruptly like that.
So it sounds like the market is anticipating a really sharp turn in the economic landscape. Maybe short-term pain leading to longer-term recovery. Is that the idea?
That's certainly one way to interpret it. The predicted near-term decline strongly suggests that market participants are factoring in recessionary concerns, much like when we see a fully inverted yield curve. But then that subsequent expected increase argues for an anticipated economic recovery later on. And that would then require higher interest rates again.
So it's this divergence, this tension between the near-term expectations and the longer-term expectation that's really key to understanding what might be going on with this divergence. The short-term pain, long-term gain expectation.
Mm-hmm.
What could possibly be the underlying driver? What's creating this unusual U-shape right now?
Well, one really compelling perspective is this concept of a phenomenon called a speculative consensus, suggesting that there's a disconnect between, on the one hand, the actions and the stated intentions of policymakers, like the Federal Reserve in the short term, and on the other hand, the longer-term view held by the broad market participants. The market, in effect, seems to be saying rates need to be lower now.
So the market thinks one thing and the Fed thinks another.
Yeah, it's as though the market is saying rates need to be lower now, but that longer-term expectations are fundamentally strong.
You mentioned this idea of speculative consensus.
Mm-hmm.
We see it in other markets too, especially FX. Can you give us a few quick examples just to make the concept clearer?
Sure, absolutely. In 1992, Black Wednesday is a great example where the Bank of England was forced to defend the currency against the market's strong conviction. The market bet against the British pound, basically forcing the UK government's action. The BOE couldn't hold against the market pressure. More recently, in 2015, the Swiss National Bank suddenly unpegged the Swiss franc from the euro.
And that caused chaos, didn't it?
It did. Many market participants were relying on the official policy peg. And in both cases, the market's collective belief, expressed through trading, essentially overpowered the official policy stance.
Any other examples, maybe outside of FX?
Sure. Some might point to the 2021 GameStop short squeeze as a speculative consensus in the equity markets.
Right, the meme stock thing.
Yes, a large group of retail investors basically acting in concert, pushing back against established institutional positions. The core idea, though, is the same. A significant part of the market believes something's going to happen, and that can create immense pressure for that actually to happen.
Okay, so tying that back to our U-shaped curve, the market seems to be anticipating a big shift in interest rates, maybe faster or more aggressively than policymakers are letting on.
Yeah, that seems to be the implication.
And this has some pretty direct and important implications for those of us managing corporate finances, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on borrowers first, the treasurers, the C-suite folks listening. How should they be thinking about that classic decision, fixed versus floating rate debt in this U-shaped environment?
Yeah, this is a really critical question right now for managing borrowing costs and risk. I mean, historically, the rule of thumb was often that floating rate borrowing would probably be cheaper over the long haul.
Pay less now, take the rate risk later.
Right. But over the past couple of years, and especially right now, with short-term rates being so high at the front end of that U, we've actually seen short-term floating rates be more expensive than long-term fixed rates. And that flips the traditional playbook completely on its head.
Okay, so the usual logic is reversed. That creates a dilemma for finance leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You're faced with this choice. Do you stick with the potentially expensive floating rate debt right now, basically hoping that the market's right and short-term rates do fall soon? Or do you lock in fixed rates now? You might miss out on those future rate declines if they happen, but you get immediate cost certainty.
Exactly.
Certainty versus potential savings.
And what's particularly interesting right now, because of the U-shape, is at the short end of the curve, let's say 2 or 3 years in that dip, right, at the bottom of the U, you might actually be able to extend your borrowing maturity and reduce your borrowing cost. This is easily accomplished with swaps and derivatives. If you wait to go long, one could also use bonds as well.
That's really interesting. So while sticking with super short-term floating might be pricey, grabbing that dip in the curve to lock in slightly longer terms could be a smart move right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about the other side? Investors, people holding bonds or making investment decisions. How should they be thinking about different bond tenors, different maturities in this U-shaped world? How do they optimize returns and manage risk here?
So for bondholders, it's a reversed perspective. First, with short-term rates being relatively high, just holding cash or investing in very short-term instruments offers a reasonably decent return right now compared to recent history. When you consider extending out into longer-term bonds, that's where the U-shape presents a specific challenge. If you extend out to maturities that fall right in the dip of the U again, that roughly 2 to 3 year range, you get paid a lot less yield when taking on increased interest rate sensitivity and duration risk.
Meaning if rates don't drop quickly enough, the price of that bond will decline quickly and you gave up yield for taking that extra risk?
Right on. I mean, you give up reward for potentially greater risk. Tough trade.
Okay, that makes sense. How does this compare to how investors normally position themselves when the yield curve has that more typical upward slope?
In a typical steep yield curve environment where longer bonds yield more, investors often take a more, let's say, balanced maturity approach, maybe a pro rata allocation across different maturities, because they're generally getting compensated with higher rewards for taking on that longer term risk.
So they spread their bets more evenly.
Correct. When the U-shape was flatter and less pronounced earlier this year, we actually observed bond investors showing a preference for somewhat shorter durations, maybe in the 3 to 5 year range, because the extra yield pickup for going much longer, say out to 10 years, just wasn't as significant enough to incentivize them to extend that far out on the curve. The reward wasn't quite there for the extra risk.
Got it. But you mentioned there's been a recent shift in what investors find attractive right now.
Yes, exactly. As the dip of that U-shape has gotten deeper, meaning the yield difference between the mid-curve low point and the higher long-term rates has widened, we've seen increased interest in long-term bonds again, particularly around the 10-year maturity point.
Okay, so bond investors are now more willing to go further out on the curve.
It certainly seems so. The more substantial yield now being offered at that longer end relative to the mid part of the curve seems to have become more attractive again for investors who are looking for higher returns, even with that increased uncertainty of going out longer on the curve.
Okay, so we've got this really unusual U-shaped curve, possibly driven by the speculative consensus idea, this gap between market expectations and official policy signals. How do these tensions typically resolve themselves in the financial markets? It sounds like there are really only a couple ways this tension can break.
Yeah. A speculative consensus, historically, generally resolves in a very binary fashion. One side essentially has to give in. One side capitulates to the other's view.
So we can expect one of two outcomes?
Pretty much. And in the current interest rate environment, the two most likely outcomes seem to be quite distinct from each other. And importantly, both would have pretty significant implications for everyone listening.
Okay, so lay out those potential resolution paths for us. What are they?
Okay, path number one. Policymakers, meaning primarily the Federal Reserve, could significantly reduce short-term interest rates. The market prediction comes true, and that action would likely lead to a more typical upward sloping or steep yield curve, just because those short-term rates have fallen dramatically relative to longer-term rates. And that's outcome one. Outcome two is the reverse. Short-term rates remain relatively anchored, maybe close to where they are now. The Fed holds the line, and instead, we see a significant upward shift in long-term interest rates as the market demands more reward for longer-term risk.
Okay, so scenario one is short-term rates plunge. Scenario two is long-term rates surge.
That's basically the binary choice, yes. Either short-term borrowing costs fall sharply or long-term borrowing costs rise considerably.
Both of those sound like they would have a pretty massive impact on financial planning and strategy.
A huge impact. And again, the historical precedent suggests that these resolutions, when they happen, tend to occur relatively quickly and decisively. It's not a slow, gradual drift. This really underscores the need for thinking about this proactively rather than just waiting to see what happens.
Okay. This binary nature, the potential for a quick, decisive shift. It sounds like something that financial executives absolutely need to be actively preparing for right now. So what can people listening actually do in this unique and uncertain environment?
Well, the first step is just awareness, simply recognizing that we're in a rare U-shaped yield curve and understanding the potential binary outcomes. That's foundational for making any informed decisions. That's step one. Step two, I think it's incredibly valuable to engage in a bit of role-playing.
Role-playing?
Yeah. Try to genuinely understand the motivations and the constraints, the reactions of those on the other side of the speculative consensus. Think about the policymakers. What are their mandates? What data are they watching? Think about the broad market participants. What are their incentives? What are they likely reacting to?
So really trying to see the situation from multiple angles, not just your own firm's perspective.
Precisely. Get in the heads of the other players. Third, robust scenario planning is absolutely essential. Think through the specific implications and risks for your organization under each of these potential paths we discussed. Significantly lower short-term rates versus significantly higher long rates. What does each world look like exactly? How would each scenario impact your borrowing costs, your investment strategies, your cash flow projections, your covenants, your overall financial health? You got to map it all out. Once you've really explored those scenarios, the fourth critical step is to think proactively about mitigating the risks that you've identified.
Right. Take action.
Yes. Explore and potentially implement strategies that can reduce cost or create greater certainty for your organization, or at least reduce the potential negative impact if one of those outcomes materializes. This could mean proactively incorporating the potential risk for each of those market outcomes into your capital planning, your funding decisions, and your overall risk management strategies. It could involve a careful look at various derivative strategies to lock in rates or provide some downside protection against sharp adverse movements in either direction. As an alternative to accessing the derivatives markets, companies can also access the term capital markets through a bond offering. And finally, it's just important to recognize that these periods when a speculative consensus is potentially resolving, that they can be characterized by heightened volatility. Things can move fast, and it's probably a time to hold on tight and just be prepared for potentially rapid shifts in the market landscape.
So to boil it down, be aware this is unusual. Try to understand everyone's perspectives, plan rigorously for both very different outcomes, and then take concrete steps to manage the risks. That sounds like a pretty solid playbook for navigating this rare U-shaped curve.
I think you covered it well. It's really about being prepared for potentially significant shifts rather than getting caught off guard.
Well, this has been a truly fascinating and I think really insightful deep dive into a very unusual market phenomenon. Just to quickly recap for everyone listening, we've explored just how rare this U-shaped yield curve actually is. We looked at its historical association with periods of financial disruption and often economic recession. We discussed this idea of speculative consensus, that gap between market views and policy signals that might be driving it, and the binary nature of how these situations tend to resolve. Either short-term rates fall hard or long rates rise significantly.
And as financial and capital markets executives look ahead as you formulate your financial strategies for the coming months, the crucial question to really grapple with is this. How are you proactively incorporating the potential for these two very different market outcomes, significantly lower short rates versus significantly higher long rates, into your capital planning and your funding decisions and your overall risk management strategies? What fundamental assumptions are currently underpinning your organization's financial posture?
That's definitely the critical area for some careful consideration. Thanks for your insights.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That concludes this episode of Expert Conversations Beyond. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe to future episodes and catch up on past releases on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. Use the link in the show notes to provide feedback on topics we've covered, other people or perspectives you'd like us to include, or anything else that we can do to make your experience more enjoyable.